This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR.
Hey, Shortwavers. Anil Oza, temporarily in the host chair today. And I'm bringing you a story about critters, but not the completely lighthearted kind. Just a few months ago, the International Union for Conservation of Nature found that some 40,000 species are threatened with extinction, and about 7,000 of those are because of climate change. But last year, I started noticing a trend.
Although it wasn't seen for 87 years, it turns out this mole isn't extinct. It's just really shy.
Okay. This is something that doesn't have a sign in it. This is one of the largest rats in the world, and here we are.
Attenborough's long-beaked echidna was rediscovered by scientists on an expedition this past summer. In
relatively remote areas across the globe, scientists were finding evidence of animals they hadn't seen for years. And I wanted to know if this was part of a bigger trend of us getting better at pinning down these species. So I called Tom.
My name is Tom Evans, and I'm a conservation scientist based at the Free University of Berlin in Germany. I'm interested in trying to protect those species from extinction and to protect them from the threats that are caused by human activities such as climate change, habitat loss, and pollution.
In January, he published a paper where he tried to catalog every four-legged animal that's been quote-unquote lost.
Lost species are those that haven't been seen in the wild for at least 10 years.
Before I talked to Tom, I hadn't heard this term lost before. I thought they were just endangered and extinct, but there is some gray area.
These are species that are being searched for by scientists in the world that can't be found.
Usually, species become lost when they're endangered because there are so few animals left. Scientists can struggle to find them. And it can be hard to allocate money and time and land to protecting them if there's no evidence that they're even still around. Which is why Tom even took on this project.
One of the aims of the project was to try and distinguish which lost species are likely to be extinct and which are likely to actually be rediscovered.
And this point takes me to one of the reasons I was really excited to talk to Tom. I have a soft spot for rats and rodents in general. Tom found that rodents made up half of all of the mammals lost to science. But they weren't often being rediscovered by them. And he had a couple of theories as to why.
The first group are those that are difficult to find. So they may be small species, or they may be species that occupy habitats that are really difficult to survey, or it may be due to their behavior, their life history traits. So perhaps they're nocturnal or they're burrowing.
So that's part of it. But also,
there's a second group of species that are neglected by conservation scientists, and that's where rodents come in. So species that are less charismatic.
But the fact that scientists are digging up these animals, despite these long-standing barriers and biases, could be a good sign. So today on the show, the world is losing species at a historic rate. But are we getting better at finding them? And what does it take to rediscover a species exactly? I'm Anil Oza, and this is Shortwave, the science podcast from NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon. This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. While some podcast topics can be complex and pretty heady, Planet Oat oat milk is an uncomplicated no-brainer. It's rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. It's great in coffee, cereal, smoothies, you name it. So next time you're at the grocery store, save the overthinking for the podcast and reach for the one that has it all, Planet Oat Oat Milk, or visit planetoat.com for more. Support for NPR and the following message come from Indeed. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/shortwave. Terms and conditions apply.
To really understand what it means to be searching for a lost species, I called up researchers to hear about a couple of case studies, specifically of endangered animals that aren't the charismatic kind, that aren't large, fluffy, or cute, like polar bears or koalas or pandas. No. I wanted to focus on two uncharismatic animals, like the Dwinton's golden mole in South Africa. Scientists had thought it was extinct for almost a century.
They don't have any visible eyes, so they're quite strange looking, actually, completely blind. They have these modified foreclaws that they use for digging their underground tunnels, and those are super cool.
Samantha Meinhardt had been searching for it since grad school. She's at the Endangered Wildlife Trust and Stellenbosch University. She says the search for this rare animal was worth it because even getting to hold one of these adorable critters is an honor.
It was just the cutest little nugget. They would just sort of fit snugly into the palm of your hand.
But what's really cool is the reason for their name.
What's really striking and beautiful about them is they have this iridescent sheen to their fur. And that's why they're called golden moles, because their fur literally glistens. You know, if you ever see them in the sun, you'll see rainbow colors in their shiny fur.
Samantha was able to find these moles last year. But before then, most of her colleagues weren't convinced Dwinton's mole was still around.
I had asked around other colleagues and experts working on golden moles who all believed that Dwinton's golden mole was extinct. But the Endangered Wildlife Trust approached me saying they really want to see, they want to go there and survey and see if they can find this mole.
And so she led a group of local scientists and colleagues from the Endangered Wildlife Trust on this expedition to see if they could find it. One of the things that made this tricky was that there are a couple of other species of golden moles in this area. So finding evidence of a mole didn't necessarily mean that they found the right mole. And they knew from the start they couldn't rely on traditional methods of collecting DNA proof.
The traditional method of getting their DNA is you'd have to go find where they are, set some traps, try and trap them. And there had been efforts to trap the species in the past unsuccessfully. So, we knew that trapping them was not going to be the right approach.
Samantha and others tried a bunch of different things to try and find the moles, like thermal drones to see heat signatures of animals underneath the soil, which sort of helped to find the moles, but wasn't a way to actually catch them. So Samantha turned to this up-and-coming technique called eDNA, or environmental DNA.
I started really getting interested in using environmental DNA as a source of DNA to study species that are really difficult to find in the environment. So species that are either rare, threatened, or really elusive. And golden moles fall into all of those categories because they live underground, so they're really difficult to find and threatened with extinction.
The idea is that as animals go about their lives, they're leaving traces of DNA in their environment, from skin cells to hair follicles to excrement and more. And this is great because they don't actually have to physically catch a mole to know that it's in the soil.
Once we've collected the soil, taken it back to the lab and sequenced it, then we can say what species it is.
Though, one fateful day, when they were staking at a local beach, they did finally spot one.
My colleague JP, snatched up the mole and we managed to get some pictures of it.
But even as they were holding this little mole, they had no idea what species it was. Until the eDNA tests, the moment of truth when they would know if they found evidence of the Dwinton's mole.
I mean, the anticipation that had built up to that moment, you can only imagine. We were excited in the first place to have come across it in the field. And then, having to conduct the lab work and wait for the sequencing results. And even once we had the sequencing results, we couldn't at first confirm the species identity.
So they did a more specific test that would tell them for sure what they had found. And this was really exciting because of how long Samantha had been working on this. But it could also be really important for putting up some protections for these shiny little guys.
Our mission really is when we find threatened species in a habitat, to use that as an incentive to say that some part of that habitat needs to be protected in order for that species to survive. So it's a conservation strategy at the end of the day.
The power of the strategy of scientists and local communities using these rediscovered species to better protect lands is really evident in the case of another quote-unquote uncharismatic species, the giant rats of Vanganu. They live deep in the jungle of just a single island in the Solomon Islands, which is northeast of Australia.
It's breathtaking forest, really. It's everything you could imagine of a tropical rainforest, huge big trees, palms everywhere, really clear streams that run through there. And it's just a really beautiful landscape.
This is Tyrone Lavery. He's a biologist at the University of Melbourne. He spent years looking for this rat.
So I started my PhD in 2010 and went to the community of Zaira on southern Vanganu. And it was my first field trip in Solomon Islands. And we went right into the interior of the island with some really senior men. And we just were chatting about what lived in their forests, mammal-wise. And they told me about this giant rat that lived in the trees.
While the species was completely mysterious to Western scientists, it was well known to the local community.
I was pretty certain that if there was a big vicar rat there, that it would be a new species, because this island of Vanganu is fairly isolated from the rest of the archipelago.
Tyrone set out to try and find evidence of vicar, at first because it could be an interesting discovery of an entirely new species. But over time, it took an even more important role. That's because companies were trying to tear down these forests.
And our big goal was just to show that this rodent did occur there, because that would kind of increase its credibility and hopefully attract support for helping them to conserve their forest.
And they eventually did find evidence of vicar, but not the way they quite hoped.
So it was a really bittersweet moment. It actually came from a logging operation that was next to Zaira, happening really close. The logging company felled a tree, and some of the guys that I worked with at Zaira were working with that logging company at the time, and they found the rat come out of one of the trees that was felled. Unfortunately, it was really badly injured and killed.
But they had the evidence they needed to at least prove that vicar existed.
And we went through a series of comparing the skull and teeth and all these characters, DNA, to other rodents from the Pacific and Australia and New Guinea, and found that it was definitely a new species, which we called Uramis vicar in honour of the existing language name.
Knowing that vicar was actually there, Tyrone doubled his efforts to get more solid evidence that it was living in the trees on the island, just like the local people were telling him. So he set up a ton of camera traps around the forest, hoping that it could pick up traces of them. And eventually, they were able to get pictures of vicar. There haven't been any official moves by the local government towards that new goal Tyrone had mentioned of protecting vicar, but there are still some changes happening. For example, the government issued development consent for a company to log the Zaira community against its wishes.
And the company was there, ready to go.
But shortly after this research came out,
all of a sudden they've now removed their machines and pulled out. So officially nothing's happened, but unofficially it seems like there's been a little bit of a change somehow.
And hearing about what these photos meant to the Zaira community, I was brought back to this question about rodents. Scientists are historically bad at keeping track of rodents, but are we getting any better? The scientists I spoke to said yes.
A big part is that we're recognizing those partnerships more, and I see it as being immensely important, and it always has been. I think it's just that it never has had the credit that it deserved.
So, after doing all of this reporting, I found myself meditating on a few things. One, by both improving the tools we have to find animals and partnering with local communities, scientists could help more communities like the Zaira people conserve the land and the local ecosystems. And two, what it means to be charismatic and what animals deserve to live. After learning the stories of these animals, what it took to find them, how important they are to researchers and locals, I'm convinced they're charismatic. But what about all the other endangered animals that are even less charismatic? Will the same time and money be given to them? This episode was produced by Margaret Serino and our showrunner, Rebecca Ramirez. It was also edited by Rebecca. I checked the facts. The audio engineer was Robert Rodriguez. I'm Anil Oza. Thank you for listening to Shortwave from NPR. Thank you.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater, committed to helping companies solve food. From employee meal plans to on-site staffing to concierge ordering support. With corporate accounts, nationwide restaurant coverage, and payment by invoice. EasyCater.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.